happy 1 year anniversary. And as a treat from us here at Decomposition to you, we will be putting out 3 episodes this week on the good, the bad, and the ugly of Weezer. And welcome once again to Decomposition Podcast, where we hyper-analyze all of your favorite terrible songs. My name is Brad, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Katie. Katie, how are you doing today?
I'm excited to kill our heroes.
We are going to kill our heroes, and it is a very special episode for us here because we once again have our 2 favorite guests. You remember the last time this happened was for Taylor Swift's Love Story. We have Teresa, of course, whooping over there.
Yes, hello, everybody.
And Josh, welcome back.
Hello again.
You were not whooping over there.
We were whooping in tandem.
Yeah, that was really creepy.
On the inside.
On the inside. And that's what's important, is what you have in your heart. So Weezer. We are doing Weezer. A band who at one point or another, we all have loved. And I think we all recognize their good, which is what we will be talking about in this episode right here.
Yes.
And then, you know, as they went down, they...
You just said it all.
Well, yeah. Okay, here we go.
Hot hole. 1 second.
Ha, ho, ha.
You are making broad statements.
I am making
that everyone
broad,
here has
accurate.
Decided they don't like Weezer anymore.
Are you a big fan of Pacific Daydream, which came out last year?
I said this earlier, not on the podcast, so I'll say it again now, that I'll try to pick a song I don't like. I put it on and I go, no, you know, I could bounce, I could dance to this one. I still like it. So.
Josh?
The broad statements haven't even begun to fall.
Those will continue.
The Weezer defender.
There we go.
I've come to the conclusion over the last 3 days that my feelings about Weezer are very complicated.
And then
the more reading I've done, like I spent like 3 days just listening and then today reading. And in my reading today, I've come to the conclusion that I am not alone, that the world's feelings about Weezer
right.
are very complicated.
Yeah. They're a band that I want to like. They're a band that I want to like
so
through and through.
So just like it.
No. simply put, no, I can't because they offered so much potential. You know, I would go so far as to say up through Maladroit is where I enjoyed Weezer, with some exceptions in between. Was that?
I said stop peeking.
That wasn't. I apologize. You don't have your notes out like that if you don't want me to cheat off your test. All right.
Okay.
But then you get like, I guess I feel like they haven't matured as a band. Like what they did in their 20s when I was in my teens, I loved and I connected with that so much. And then as I got older and they got older, I felt like they hadn't grown up and they were still singing about the same things that I connected with as a teen when I was well in my 20s.
I would like to argue that, in fact, they have, and I'm so sorry, Teresa.
It's okay.
She's not sorry.
Retrogressed, because when I've been, so for days, I've just been listening to Weezer. And I've had just Alexa playing Weezer on shuffle, so any song could come up from
any album.
Don't
say that
too
loud. She's going to hear you.
Oh, shoot. Sorry, everyone. And I realized that I heard more songs that I didn't care for than I did. And that was disappointing to me because I think that this is a band that I love, but maybe I just love the Blue album and a few other songs.
I agree thoroughly. Even listening to songs on the Green album and Maladroit, and I mean, I was never a huge Pinkerton fan, but I understand why.
Blasphemy.
I understand why hardcore Weezer fans like that album.
Because it's great.
But like, so here's a, they grew up.
Yeah.
They don't like everything they did in growing up. But what's sort of strange about it is then once in a while they come out with these songs where they're singing about mature topics with teenage angst.
Yeah,
so
Pork
and Beans being
comes
to mind. Like, you know, they say I need some Rogaine to put in my hair. And then the chorus, I'm going to do the things I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, it's talking about like, You can't make me get a 401k.
And hey,
you can't make me pay this mortgage.
There are days where that sentiment could really appeal to me.
Sure.
You know, I was just talking with one of my classes, my college class, about the poem Where the Sidewalk Ends and the Street Begins. And the one thing that everyone could agree upon, whether they'd read Shel Silverstein as a child or not, is that the middle stanza, which is like, let us leave this place of smoke and fumes and dark streets, was that was obviously adult life, and that adult life is the part that sucks and you want to go somewhere else.
Here, Shel Silverstein.
You know, just saying that there's an appeal for the, you can't make me have a 401k, I won't do it.
But we are not yet going to get into the bad side of Weezer. For now, we are going to talk about their shining moments throughout their career.
Mm-hmm.
Weezer the Good.
Yes.
So we all have chosen a Weezer song to discuss. We have all been responsible for our own research and interest in whatever song we choose. And so the way I would like to do it is to have each of us explain the song, and then we talk about that, and then we will move on to the next person. Is that...
Sounds good.
Everybody cool with that?
And our rules for today were slightly different because it was the good song. It didn't have to be a hit. We were allowed to pick just like whatever Weezer song we love that we wanted to talk about.
Sure. I should let it be known that I am, for the most part, only really familiar with Weezer's hits after the Blue Album.
Okay.
No, that's not true. I'm a liar. I lied. I've lied to you guys and I apologize. I am familiar with the Green Album start to finish, which has some real weak points on it.
Yeah, I had the Green Album and I listened to it a lot, so.
Yeah.
Just realize it's for the next one.
Oh, you're looking to get into the bad now.
No! Put it off.
Josh is trigger happy.
This is difficult for 3 out of 4 of us. Yeah. Teresa is our resident sweetie sweetheart, so this is really her wheelhouse.
And she's also the biggest Weezer fan of the 4 of us.
But for Josh, myself, and Brad, this is like, oh, I really just want to say what I don't like about everything, and it's so difficult to stay in the positive zone.
So then what I would like to do is, I would like to start with Teresa.
Oh boy.
I would like for Teresa to just read off her what I'm assuming is list of Weezer songs.
So she has my pages of Weezer.
She literally has a legal pad with her.
It's not
in
full.
A folder.
It's only half full. It's the only thing we had that was close to
First
a notebook.
First of all, it's classy.
House.
Don't sell yourself short, all right?
I'm taking a picture of that before you leave.
My classy, classy thing. So, all right, so...
tell us about your song, Teresa.
My Weezer song, I know is probably going to get made fun of, but it brings me pure joy, and I often play it while I am cleaning up my house, and I dance like a fool, and I blast it, and my dog hops around me.
Your dog is a Weezer fan,
huh? Oh, loves it. Every time Weezer comes on, he moves an inch.
I'm going to laugh hilariously if we have the same favorite song.
Oh.
I'm going to laugh hilariously if she goes with Pork and Beans.
No, it's not Pork and Beans. So this is a song that is off of Pinkerton, which is my favorite Weezer album, that I know Brad already said he did not like because he's a crazy person.
That's not the only reason I don't like it.
So it's off of Pinkerton, and the song is called The Good Life.
Oh, okay. I know this song.
I don't know the song at all.
We heard it earlier today.
Good.
And it's one of the...
Why don't we give Teresa the floor?
Yeah, sorry. It's charging all over here.
Fun. It is a blast. I have some quotes about it. Peter J. D'Angelo said that it is a bouncy rock track with a staggeringly affecting hook, and its driving lyrics make it an instant hit. Rolling Stone once said it was catchier than syphilis, which was my favorite quote about it. So it was the second single off of Pinkerton, and Pinkerton was not a commercially successful album. It was their second album, and it was very raw. Rivers Cuomo said that he basically revealed all his feelings and his heart in Pinkerton, and then it was really not accepted by anybody. And he said, it's a hideous record. It was such a hugely painful mistake that happened in front of hundreds of thousands of people and continues to happen on a grander and grander scale. And just won't go away. It's like getting really drunk at a party and spilling your guts in front of everyone and feeling incredibly great and cathartic about it, and then waking up the next morning and realizing what a complete fool you've made of yourself. That he said in 2001. Now,
wow.
Yeah. So he, because it wasn't successful, because it was such for him, it felt like a disaster after the success of the Blue album. It was heartbreaking. And later on, though, feelings about Pinkerton have changed. In 2004, Rolling Stone changed their original review of it. Originally, they gave it 3 stars and they changed it to 5 stars. In 2008, Rivers Cuomo finally embraces the Pinkerton album. And then they did in 2010, they released deluxe editions of the Blue album and Pinkerton and did a whole tour where they just played those songs, which I wish I had been able to go to. But this song, The Good Life, it was the second single. The first single was El Scorcho, and El Scorcho didn't do well, so they rush released the second single, hoping that maybe this will pump up sales. And it reached number 32 on the U.S. modern rock chart. To him, that was a failure.
It was top 40.
Yeah, you know? To him, that it was a failure, but in reality, it's like, you top 40. Come
on. I learned today that, and this is not one of my songs, so this isn't a spoiler, but in my research, I learned that Buddy Holly only got to 34 on the modern rock charts.
And so this one did better
on the Hot 100 somehow, but on the modern rock chart, it only went to number 34. I learned that because it was actually less successful than the song I picked, which was a surprise. So in that respect, your song is a bigger success in the rock genre than Buddy Holly, which is iconic Weezer.
Yeah. The other thing Teresa was saying was that it has been since accepted a lot more, and it's gotten a lot better reviews kind of in retrospect, because this is in a way, this is the fan album. This is the album that they put out for the hardcore Weezer fans. And it was then voted one of the greatest rock albums of all time by Rolling Stone users or something like that. And it's very niche, though. You know, it is.
It was the 16th greatest album of all time in 2002, Rolling Stone readers.
Yeah, it was rated one of the top albums of the 90s. But again, it was I think this is an example of one of those albums that the critics were boo. And then the critics later on, when fans were actually, we really like this, the critics were no, it's good. Really liked it all.
Take it back. Yeah. We go back on everything we said.
You know, we panned it when it came out. But now that the users and listeners have said that it's a great album, we're turning around and we agree with you.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Green Day's second commercially successful album. So Dookie was there.
Nimrod?
No, not Nimrod. It had really hard music on it.
Geek Stink Breath was on it.
Yeah.
What was that album?
And I can't
remember
the name of the album, so maybe somebody could find out for me. But Dookie came out and it was one thing, and it was, it had its, rough edges, but it was poppy underneath that grittiness and roughness and all the cursing and everything. And then this second album comes out and it's much harder. And actually, it's not bad at all. I love that album too, even though I can't remember the title of it, because that's just who I am as a person, and I ask for you all to accept me for who I am. But people didn't like it, and critics had a bad response to it. Even fans had a bad response to it. And I think it was because it just took a different, unexpected turn.
Yeah.
And Pinkerton is harder than the Blue album. I mean, I would not call it hard rock. But it's got a rougher, harder sound, crunchier sound.
There's a lot behind
it,
too. He wrote it while he was at Harvard, and he was taking all these classes.
One of the times he was at Harvard.
And he was inspired. He was going to try to do a rock opera. And so
Songs from the Black Hole.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was inspired by Madame Butterfly to do these things. Then he kind of scrapped that idea, but still made the album with some of the songs that were supposed to be on that.
If I can interject a factoid here, Pinkerton is a character in Puccini's Madame Butterfly. So
exciting. I didn't know that. Right.
The Green Day album was called Insomniac.
I loved that album. Yeah. I bought it on the day it came out, and I even stayed home sick from school. I was really psyched.
But it's dirtier. It's a little more, by design, underproduced.
And they self-produced it. They did it themselves.
They didn't have a hired producer. Yeah. Which is interesting, because Blue album was produced by Rick Ocasek of
The
Cars.
So was the Green album, too. Yeah.
So was Pinkerton.
No. Pinkerton was self-produced.
Yeah.
Okay. I know he did three different albums.
He may have done
some of
the later
ones. Blue and
Green.
I'm not sure about what later on.
Is that what it was?
Did he do Ratitude?
Maybe.
The
worst
name
for an album? Let's not talk about Ratitude
right now. Ever.
Oh, I bet we're going to talk about it.
So, Teresa, Can you tell us what it is about the song "The Good Life"?
So first off, this is reflecting something that he went through himself. This Rivers Cuomo, he was born with one leg longer than the other, and so he had corrective surgery after the whole Blue Album and everything to lengthen one leg. So he was going through this extremely painful recovery. And when we were we going through the lyrics?
Lyrics,
what we're gonna do is we'll pick out lyrics okay. that particularly stand out.
So like as he's kind of talking, kind of sharing the story, it's really reflecting his recovery and how painful it is. But the poppy beat in the background is, I just love it. All right. So he says, like, when I look in the mirror, I can't believe what I see. Tell me who's that funky dude staring back at me, broken, beaten down, can't even get around without an old man cane. I fall and hit the ground, shivering in the cold. I'm bitter and alone. So it's like, oh, poor Rivers. Like, you poor guy. Now, that's very much Teresa's personality to be like, oh, you. Help that's a nice out.
I just want to cradle him in my arms and tell him everything's going to be all right.
So that's a nice juxtaposition, though, that the title is The Good Life, and then the content is really about something that's difficult.
And then he goes on, he's saying, like, excuse the bitching, I shouldn't complain, I should have no feeling, because feeling is pain, and everything I need is denied me, and everything I want is taken away from me, but who do I gotta blame? Nobody but me. It's like, so he's complaining and he's realizing, like,
I chose to get this surgery,
I did this to myself, why am I complaining right now? Like, this is something I did. And then the chorus, I don't want to be an old man anymore, it's been a year or two since I was out on the floor, shaking booty, making sweet love all the night. It's time I got back. That's Katie.
Song now.
It's time I got back to the good life. It's time I got back. It's time I got back. And I don't even know how I got off the track. I want to go back. Yeah.
What's interesting to me is that he's talking about how he wants to get back to making sweet love all the night. First of all, Katie, I apologize if your gag reflex was just, you know.
I'll let you finish your thought.
Whereas earlier in the album, he has the song Tired of Sex, which I know was supposed to be included on the Blue Album. That wasn't originally supposed to be a Pinkerton song. But that song is basically about how he's tired of having sex. As the song title is.
Can I say two things? Can I say two things?
No, we've got to talk about shaking booty.
No, it's about that. So first of all, I'm so sorry, Teresa, because I was really on board with you for a second. And then you reminded me that that's the line that makes me know the song. And I really don't like this song at all. That was just the line that made me remember that I don't like the song. Although I haven't listened to the lyrics the way that you just explained them. So I would give it another try. Number two, I believe the song Tired of Sex is about being tired of sleeping around.
Amen. Absolutely.
And it's about wanting to make love. Yeah. Gross. Disgusting love.
Because
I do know the song Tired of Sex, and I'm going to say that, in fact, thematically, it's in line with this one. I think Tired of Sex is
I don't know that song that well. I just know
one
that.
Night stands or just
because he goes through like Monday night, I'm with this girl, Tuesday night, Thursday night. He's like going through the whole week, I'm with all these girls, and I'm just tired
this
of
poor guy.
All of this. But I mean,
poor him.
He like.
Wah, wah.
He wants something real.
So is
he released because he released a hit album and then he went to college.
Yeah.
I'm sure that
went to Harvard.
Sure,
and then he
really
was just
rough.
Like girls banging hate girls Harvard, left guys. And right.
Here's my question. Is Rivers Cuomo like totally bangable?
No, it's not my type of.
Oh, I used to really think he was a cutie p-toots when I was.
When he had that massive bowl haircut and the sweater song.
And the stupid
Katie
glasses.
Was into hipsters before
I
they were.
Loved
Katie
it.
Was always into
I was
nerd.
OG.
Katie has always been into nerdy guys like her entire life. From Doogie Howser to her lawfully wedded husband, who I hear is a massive nerd. Like, yeah. So
that's a Doogie Howser is a particularly good choice.
Yeah, well.
Can we leave me out of this, please?
Can
I know
point
exactly
out,
where you would go with that.
Yeah. That's been a running joke, Katie, for a long, long time here. Can I point out how much I hate the phrase funky dude?
What do you want him to say?
I want him to anything else. Tell me who's that lonely guy.
That's
me,
boring. Funky
me.
Dude sounds so much better. Phonetically, like the sound, the funky. Like
I disagree.
That has a better
and I have
word.
A problem with the way he says the words funky dude. Tell me, who's that funky dude?
I think that's his like his thing, though. Like using phrases that he shouldn't use is like.
Because that's nerdy. That's geeky to say shaking booty, making sweet love.
You know
to
what?
Say all those
and
things.
I get behind that. And I subscribe to that mentality an awful lot of the time.
You dig it?
I can dig it. Can you
got it, dude?
However,
picking up what he's laying down.
Mm-hmm. I'm picking that up. Yeah. But that doesn't mean I enjoy it in this song.
I also partially think, too, it's a way of cleaning up. I'm sure standing looking in the mirror, he's like, I look so effed up, not so funky.
Because you're effed, not like, standing for you funky.
You
could be
like,
okay.
Part of me thinks, like, he's standing there, like, who's that? I'm going to say, I'm
replace
sorry.
That
who's
that effed up
dude? That it's like, well, I can't say that. If I want this to be a radio thing, I'd rather be like, who's that funky dude? Okay, I got right. it. It's in there.
I agree with you. I think that it is kind of in line with the persona of River Cuomo's. Cuomo? Just
Rivers.
Cuomo. Rivers Cuomo. Cuomo. Well, yeah. I knew there was an S somewhere.
You know
somewhere.
His brother's name is Leaf?
That's stupid.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I did just learn he apparently spent his early years living on an ashram and had
yeah.
like really
yeah.
hippie
yeah.
parents.
He like in a he worked like a yoga place. Very, very
He's
hippie.
Been a vegetarian his entire life. Mm-hmm. Which, when we get into the bad and the really bad, I'm sure somebody will bring up the lyric.
No. No spoilers, Brad. No spoilers.
You're just going to have to tune in to find out about Rivers Cuomo's vegetarianism.
I don't know. Any other... like?
There's a bridge and a verse three. Are those anything in those lyrics
I mean,
that speaks
Teresa,
to you?
Is there anything else you want to say about your song?
I mean, he says...
I'm a pig, I'm a dog.
Woof, woof.
Excuse me, does he
it's
woof?
In the song.
I ain't no Mr. Cool.
He says, screw this crap, I've had it. I ain't no Mr. Cool. So, you know, he knows. He's not yeah. cool. He's a nerd. I'm a pig, I'm a dog, so excuse me if I drool. I ain't going to hurt nobody. I ain't going to cause a scene. Just need to admit that I want sugar in my
Listen,
tea.
You Hear don't
me.
Have to micro Hear machines me. These lyrics. You know that, right?
I feel like there are so many songs to discuss, so I better go through these really fast.
Battery's not included.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything like major that's left that I want to talk about. It's like why I love it. It's really just the sound of it. It makes me happy, makes me want to dance, even though it's about a very hard time in his life.
I want sugar in my tea.
Hear me?
That's a question.
It's this hard time in his life. And I think having that peppy beat that's catchier than syphilis is a way of him cheering himself up, too. It's like, let me take this hard thing I'm going through and put it next to something fun and do that.
I also kind of have a problem with like the long like slide guitar outro that happens in this song.
That was actually also then sampled recently. On
like the slow part? Yeah, I know what a slide guitar
is. You know what
does.
That's
yeah, yeah,
like.
Sure.
I just wanted to, just for the audience who wasn't aware, I thought sound effects would be helpful. So there's some Vic Mensa, a song called Homewrecker, which is terrible. I listened to it, so you don't have to. It's bad.
Thank you for making that sacrifice.
Thank you.
But it's a loop of like this droopy guitar song from the bridge, a sound. That's how I hear it. It's like droopy yeah. sounding. Mm-hmm. And then Rivers added some vocals at the end of the track. But yeah, that part. So you don't like that part?
No, it doesn't do it for me.
I think, again, that's bringing in the, even though I'm trying to cheer myself up with this happy beat, this is happening in my heart and in my like feelings and this physical pain that I'm having.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. What you're saying makes sense. This is not the album for me.
Sad days. I'm going to go listen to this song again and see if it changes my
opinion.
Now that
you know like the background
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it another go.
That doesn't change the song for me though.
Yeah.
And I mean, I mean, I'm a sucker for like a pop tune and a catchy hook. And that's ultimately why. You know, and as a human being, I reserve the right to say, like,
you have your feelings.
This song, this album doesn't do it
Live
for
your
me.
Life,
I mean, that's the premise of your entire
podcast. That's the whole show.
Well, I am objectively correct at all times.
Ooh, that is, like, baby.
Oh, boy. I don't know if we all agree with that.
You should, because then you're wrong.
And well, I don't know if anybody's ever seen the video. I didn't until I was looking this stuff
I haven't.
Up. But it has Marilyn Raskob in
it. Oh, yeah, Marilyn Raskob. Yeah,
she
yeah.
is...
she was Gail the Snail in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Why do you have to steal Teresa's fact that she's about to read?
Because I'm a loudmouth.
Brad likes the facts.
I do. I love facts. I do.
You got to give over control,
it's
baby.
Right.
No,
I apologize,
it's
Teresa.
Really... I didn't have much to say about it except for the fact that it was directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, who directed Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, really?
Cool.
And the rhythm section acts super weird in the video.
Oh, boy.
Matt Sharp and Pat Wilson do some weird airplane fly. Like, they pretend they're children that are airplanes.
Listen, all these guys
it's
always
really weird.
Do weird things
like,
in the video.
Like, Rivers Cuomo and Brian Bell, who, like, you know, both play the guitar and lead singer, all that stuff, they are being totally normal musicians, and the other guys are in the background. At one point, Pat Wilson, the drummer, is, like, playing the drums with maracas.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like an effective drum playing method, but
neither does running around in a circle around
like,
your drum kit.
But
they did that in Sweater Song. So.
They're kind of goofy in the background. So I don't know. That's
I think that was like sort of apropos to the moment, though.
Yeah.
Like it was,
yeah.
That was like, it was prime MTV time.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, so that's, yeah.
You know, the videos were as important or more important to making a single successful. Sure.
Coming off the heels of like grunge rock.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And coming off the success, because I don't know if they were nominated or they won, I think, for Buddy Holly.
Well, yeah, with those Spike Jonze videos.
Yeah. So Spike Jonze, I think they actually won, like, you know, most innovative, you know, new video or something like that.
Yeah. Teresa, have you ever considered becoming a Weezer biographer?
I was just doing research. That's all. My notes, this is how I take notes in faculty meetings. There's kinds of fun
you,
things that happen.
You did a great job with that.
Yeah,
I'm just
you
saying
did.
That
thanks,
your
guys.
Your knowledge, your off-the-cuff knowledge of Weezer, in addition to the notes you took, maybe you should publish Weezer.
There's so much personal love for Weezer and memories attached to all of this that
yeah.
They were the Blue and Pinkerton were the first albums I ever bought.
You just called it Blue. That is
the
really
Blue album.
Heartfelt.
Yeah. Well, I was abbreviating. Blue. I didn't have time to say the whole thing.
I had raced through these lyrics already.
I had to go faster. Just say Blue, you know.
I think you did a good job.
Yeah.
I know that you didn't convince Brad, but I'm going to go give it another listen.
We're not here to convince each other, though, ultimately.
Aren't we always here to convince each other? That's me.
Only me, yeah.
I'll give it another listen with more perspective.
Yeah,
I like
sure.
It.
Maybe I should check out the rest of the album and see if I still don't care for it.
Maybe you're like a Rolling Stone critic. It's grown on you with age.
Maybe. Maybe at the very least, I'll say I liked it more than Ratitude. So.
Yeah, well. Somebody go next?
Yeah, Josh, can we move on to you? Can you tell us a little bit about the song you chose while I grab
so
myself another brewski?
Yeah, we can do that. So I feel like I need to preface this. As I said earlier, my feelings about Weezer are complicated. And one sort of, I came to two specific truths, and one I'll talk about now and one I'll talk about in the next
episode.
And one of the truths that I came to over the last several days, I've always been sort of a casual Weezer fan. And I've always liked playing the songs on guitar and like playing them in cover bands and jamming around them.
We used to cover at the very least one that you may or may not be choosing right now. So
right.
I'll hold off on this.
Right. So one of the things that I realized and I was having trouble with over the last few days, I was having a lot of trouble figuring out what my true feelings were about the different songs. And then I made like a really intentional move and I started listening to other bands covering Weezer songs.
Okay.
And very quickly came to the conclusion that I love Weezer music and I don't like Weezer.
Oh, interesting.
I like Weezer songs. I think they're really well written. I think that some of the lyrics are really fun and have a great pop sensibility, and the melodies can be really hooky. And I hate certain decisions that they make in terms of how they produce them, how they sing them, you know, what they do with the rhythms and different arrangements that they do. And when you like remove all of that crap from it and have somebody else do it in a different way, I like it more. So we're going to take a really long journey here.
Oh, boy. All right.
My favorite song is from the 1996 album Pinkerton.
Oh. Yay!
And it may come as a bit of a surprise. It's El Scorcho.
Yes! Holy shit. Oh! I chose the same song,
it's
Josh.
It's a great song, too.
I chose the same song, buddy.
I knew Brad's song was going to be El Scorcho.
That is my favorite Weezer song of all time.
God
to this day.
Me, it's half Japanese, girl.
It's,
do it
Josh,
to me every
line,
time.
You hear that line and you instantly...
That
you,
is a great opening line.
It's such a good opening line.
Yeah.
You hear it and you immediately, you have to sing along with it. It is like, I know very few songs that get you within 3 seconds of the opening of the song. So it's really
that
just
guitar
really
riff is awesome. It's just two chords strummed out, like picking out the individual notes, but it's got it has that wonderful like geeky Weezer appeal to it. You know,
Teresa's so delighted because she's just realized at least 3 out of 4 of us have picked songs from Pinkerton.
That's right.
And it's just a killer song. It's hyper relatable. And I think I can say this without being too insidey. Whenever I hear that song, I think about a specific drummer that we grew up with, and knew very well. Who, like, I feel like from a relatable standpoint, this individual would have been very fond of half Japanese girls,
yeah,
and would have fawned over girls that he couldn't get.
They do it to him
get.
Every time.
Oh, the redhead said you shred the cello.
And, you know, the only thing is that, and again, as I kept reading through this, I was like, some of these lines are just really freaking weird. What
significance do they have?
About?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, he was at Harvard. And then I read deeper and I was like, oh, he ripped these off from somebody.
Yeah,
else
that was the
class.
He pulled them from, he stole them from an essay he peer reviewed in like his expository writing class.
Right, which is insane.
One of which is specific to ECW wrestling.
What the heck? Like, he's referring to a wrestler being thrown through a table.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. I mean, it gives me a different perspective
on...
Tell
me exactly what
watching
that line...
grunge leg drop New Jack through a press table.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then
listening
in the
to
very...
Cho Cho's hand fall in love all over again. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
right.
the
and
references
then
to Madame Butterfly all over again.
Right. So you've got now this Madame Butterfly thing. So this I don't know. I don't know where the hell those... I mean, I know where they're coming from. I don't know why they're included there, but clearly they had an influence as he named the album Pinkerton.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But just the rest of the song, it just... the melody is amazing. The hook just gets
yeah.
instantly. The lyrics...
The sing-along chorus.
Sing-along chorus.
Everybody just gang vocal yelling, I'm a lot like you, so please, hello.
I'm here.
I'm like, it's any bar that you ever want to be in.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody joins in and sings along with you.
Uh-huh. Agreed.
And it's
all of
just...
us outcasts singing this together.
Right.
In unity. Like,
I
yeah.
love it. I love it, too. In fact, one of the reasons that this didn't... It wouldn't have been my first choice, but the one of the reasons it didn't make my short list was because I felt that Brad was going to pick it, and I wanted to... just leave it off because
I'm so
there was
happy Josh chose it
too.
Also because yeah. now we can just like I almost said gangbang but I
oh,
meant
boy. My
I
word.
Meant tag team
makes sweet love
oh,
all night long.
So I can tell you where the Madame Butterfly stuff came from is that evidently Puccini's Madame Butterfly is what Rivers Cuomo would listen to while he was studying at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he draws a lot of influence on this album, start to finish, this album that I don't care for.
Go ahead.
It's just out there.
Does anybody know, because I didn't find this information... Like, I love the whole idea of, like, I asked you to go to the Green Day concert.
You said you never heard
of them. You've never heard of them. How cool is that? And, like, I totally get that whole, like, this girl doesn't like the band I like.
Do we want to
oh,
do a
so
sing-along
cool.
to
so
this at the end of the episode?
Yeah, you sing along
like,
to everything.
What the hell is no, so I went to your room and read your diary?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
messed up, dude.
Oh, can I interject something I feel I've learned about Rivers Cuomo by listening to so much Weezer over the last week? He's a creepy boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's like yeah. a yeah. really
creepy, obsessive, needy,
intense. Creepy creepy, controlling.
He wants somebody
desperate
to
boyfriend.
Keep his fingernails clean.
That's,
first of all,
that is a stupid dream. Clean.
That is my favorite part in the song because the guitar riff at that point makes this like confused sound.
Like what?
Well, it's magical.
I mean, at least whoever he's with can be confident that he will bring home the turkey as long as she makes
bring
the
bring home the bacon.
Sort of how I took that.
So yeah. Cho Cho San is
he won't eat bacon or turkey.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he'll eat tofurkey.
Excellent point. Cho Cho San is the character in the opera who is Madame Butterfly. In fact, Cho Cho means butterfly in Japanese. Part of this was written after he received a letter from a Japanese fan, and he said he instantly fell in love with her, even though he had never met her.
Like the song Across the Sea?
Is that a Weezer song?
Mm-hmm.
He says
okay,
something about
that
too. So Rolling Stone rated this the number 3 best Weezer song of all time. Number 2 was Only in Dreams and number 1 was Say It Ain't So. And it peaked at number 19 on Billboard's Modern Rock track. I also want to point out that watching Grunge Leg Drop New Jack Through a Press Table. And what was the other line he ripped off from that?
It was the Cho-Cho...
Was it Cho Cho San listening to Cho Cho San?
Yeah.
Those are not the only lines he stole in this song. He also stole the line, I'm the epitome of Public Enemy.
I love that line. Oh, it's such a shame that he stole it.
From Public Enemy on their song, Don't Believe
right.
the Hype.
Oh.
And then he credited in the album liner notes for everything, he credited both the student at Harvard
okay.
and
that's
Public
awesome.
Enemy. So he was like...
Citing his sources.
He
all right, the history
sources.
Teacher and the English teacher are happy. We're okay with it.
So now the appropriate citations have been made.
Can
thus,
I tell you the part of the song that I love, even though it's not my song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love the part that goes, how stupid is it?
The bridge, yes! The bridge is great.
I can't
when all
talk
sudden,
about it. I got to sing about it.
When it turns
and
into
make
like
a record of my heart.
Maximum punk rock at that bridge.
The sound of it is so like crunchy and yeah. great. And then the words are so sweet and vulnerable. I love it. And then I heard Teresa's quote about his feelings about the whole album of Pinkerton and the fact that this line is, I've got to sing about it and make a record of my heart. It feels like it's about the whole album yeah. as well as about being about the girl in the song.
And then critics say it's terrible. I could cry thinking about it. I won't.
This song, this song,
Teresa,
but he's
so
magnificent. This song is the ultimate Weezer song in my opinion.
It's great. Yes. I love it.
He's so influenced by sort of outside sources.
Yeah.
Like, you can see how, like, the whole world saying that they hate this song would make him be like, I hate it. It's awful. It's a piece mm-hmm. of garbage. And then everybody changing their minds and saying they love it. Him being like, yeah, man, I always knew this was a really great album. Because, yeah. like, you look through, like, their career, like, over several times, like, they've released a whole bunch of their songs on the internet and basically had people vote on their songs yeah. to decide the album.
I wonder if that's, like, a direct reflection of, like, his self-esteem through the years.
I think it has to be.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like he might be an insecure yeah. gentleman.
Oh, absolutely.
Which
can I?
We might get into more.
Can I talk about the third verse, the last verse in this song?
But just briefly Sorry. Before we get into that, because there's one other fact that I thought was really sort of accidentally funny, because he's using all these different cultural references and stealing from other people and talking about Green Day and Madame Butterfly. And then they in Wikipedia, they cited this other interesting, like, probably incidental fact. So you've got Pinkerton is the name of the album, and then he refers to Cho Cho Sang, and then the singer who played Cho Cho Sang at the opera's premiere in 1904 was Rosina Storchio.
Really interesting. Yeah. That's just a funny coincidence right there.
Yeah, it
was. They don't think Estorcio?
That had Storchio.
The song is El Scorcho.
I just had the blankest look on my face.
I know your face.
So the like, song was titled after the hot sauce at the restaurant Del Taco, which was called Del Scorcho.
Del Scorcho. So they yeah,
yeah, which is bizarre, but like I
it doesn't seem like it was that difficult of a song to come up with a title for. Like, I love that he was like, oh, we need a title for the song. What on earth do we call it?
And somebody picked up a packet of hot sauce and said, El Scorcho.
Perfect.
So the third verse I want to talk about a little bit here. I wish I could get my head out of the sand because I think we'd make a good team and you would keep my fingernails clean. But that's just a stupid dream that I won't realize because I can't even look in your eyes without shaking. And I ain't faking. I'll bring home the turkey if you bring home the bacon. That is nerdy and brilliant and WTF all at the same time.
The sound of it is wonderful. Like where the rhyme is placed and the words that rhyme and click with one another. It's so good.
I know.
He makes a handful of references to fingernails throughout his songwriting.
He probably didn't like dirty fingernails.
He's got a weird obsession with fingernails.
Playing guitar, don't your like fingernails get all messed up?
Oh,
like,
I mean, your fingertips definitely.
My dad's fingernails always used to like crack from playing. Like,
Brad's fingernails, though.
I never kept my fingers. Some people keep their fingernails longer to play guitar.
Finger picking it, like, if you do that.
Which I don't typically play that way. And so I don't worry about
my fingers.
My dad
plays acoustic, that's all he does. And
But even the, are we still there? Can we talk about the chorus for a second?
Yeah,
we can talk about whatever you want.
Just because I'm a lot like you.
Mm-hmm. So please.
So please, hello, I'm here, I'm waiting. And I think I'd be good for you and you'd be good for me. Like, I'm a lot like, what does that even mean? Like, I'm a lot like you. Like, I'm putting you up on this pedestal, but like, I'm a lot like you. So you should really like me.
Like, that's what he's hoping for. Yeah, we have so many similar interests.
But
yeah.
She doesn't like, she's never heard of Green Day.
That's true.
I think it's more of the, like, you're a human being and I'm a human being and I think we could be really happy together.
Or it's like he's too quiet to ever share the things. Like, she's so super cool and he sees all the cool things. Mm-hmm. Like, she's so cool she doesn't even know who Green Day is. I don't know.
But she plays cello. I love music. You love music.
Or he saw a half Japanese girl.
You're Jello and I'm Jello. That was great. Is anybody have any final thoughts on El Scorcho?
Cheers.
Cheers, boy. Oh, let's all cheers because we all love it.
Josh, this is what we get for spending, 20 years together?
I'm 100% sure that you introduced me to that song and probably 99% sure that I didn't hear it played by Weezer first. I heard it played by you first.
Really?
Oh, yes. Well, that's funny.
Because that's not even the song I was talking about that we used to cover. Mm-mm. So,
Brad also introduced me to this song on a mix CD that he made for me when I was living in England, which was called UK Ain't Got Shit on This Mix.
That's true.
I guess it was a, like, come back and hang out with us.
Apologies
in the
to everybody
States.
In the UK, because now that I've been there, I love it there.
You're
so
like, the UK might have
you
something
got,
on
you
this
got
mix.
Some, you got some good mixes of your own,
one
UK.
Of these days, they'll release some good music.
Oh, boy.
I don't. That's a joke, right?
That's absolutely that's a joke. Teresa, I know you're a history teacher, hold but allow me to school you on something called the British Invasion.
Okay. That's why I said, is that a joke?
They also kindly came back in the 60s and were like, hey guys, you know all this blues you ignored?
Yeah, remember all this music that you racist jerks ignored?
Remember that Eric Clapton guy who took our blues and then just ran with it?
Yeah.
Well, this song has such personal memories for me. It makes me think of driving to Maine with one of my high school very close friends, Lee, and listening.
To Cho-Cho Sam?
Exactly. But listening, she didn't even have a CD player in the car. We had a boombox in the backseat as her mom is driving, listening to the song on repeat over and over because we're trying to figure out, what is he saying?
So
what is going on? What does this mean?
Here's the thing. The reason I know I don't like the album Pinkerton is because I borrowed it from an old friend of mine, and I had it in my car for probably about a month and a half, and I listened to the entire thing, but I just kept listening to El Scorcho on repeat over and
it's
over
great.
And over again. I could not get enough of this
song. Means it's a great song. It doesn't mean the rest of the album is bad. It just means
no
that
it doesn't but it does mean that I didn't like the rest
that's
of
what,
the album.
The way Brad listens to an album, though, and this isn't a criticism, it's just the way you do listen to an album.
That's how I do, boo.
You listen for 10, 15 seconds, and you're a musician, and you have really particular taste. You know what you like, even if it's Air Supply. And if you
you're
don't...
goddamn right.
If you don't hear what you want to hear, you change. That's it.
No.
You just go.
No.
I will give an album one listen all the way through. Mm-hmm. It has one chance to make it through for me.
That's fine. If I don't get
what I want out of that album the first time through, like, if there's a couple of songs here and there that I like, I will go back to those songs and they can grow on me.
Or if somebody recommends that I re-listen to a song, The Good Life, for example, like, I'll go back and re-listen to that song. Maybe it didn't catch me on the first run through, but, you know, I'll go back to something even if I've decided I didn't like it at first.
But Brad ain't got time for double listens when he could be making love out of nothing at all.
I could be making
know?
Love out of nothing at all. I could be editing these episodes. There's a lot of time spent doing that.
When I get a CD, and I still buy CDs, I will put it in my car and it just stays in there and plays over and over and over again. And then I'm like, you know, after a while, like, nah, I'm not into it. Or it just becomes a part of my soul. And I feel like my glowing orb of soul.
Oh, that's a thing you think exists. That's right. Yeah.
You know, that's
what
something
was that
I remember.
From?
That was from, the Christmas Shoes episode.
Was that Christmas Shoes where we were glowing
orbs
of
soul?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Back before we had availability of the entirety of music knowledge, you know, at our fingertips at any given moment.
In my pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
And could just flip back and forth like a person with ADD. We all did that, right? You had a CD.
Sure.
You put it in your car or a mixtape or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And you put it in. And I think if you listen to any song in the world enough times over and over and over again, it will start to get stuck in your head. It will start to appeal to you. But I find now when I go back to those albums that I listened to, and I'll be like, oh man, I remember listening to this all over and over and over again. And I go back to listen to it now and I'm like, there's like two good songs on this. The rest
of I feel that way about so many of like the punk bands that I listened to when I was in high school. Like especially like of the local scene who I thought were like
totally
the bee's knees.
It's like album Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah.
I'm relieved.
Like you're trapped
you.
By that album for so long that you begin to fall in love with it and find things you like about it.
But I'll go back and still love it though.
I'm relieved to tell you I didn't feel that way about the Blue Album. I listened to the Blue Album so many times this week, and I always used to say the Blue Album by Weezer is perfect from start to finish. I love it. They're not my favorite band, but it's one of my favorite albums that I've ever listened to. And then it'd been a long time since I'd listened to the whole thing, and I thought, oh gosh, what if that feeling isn't there?
I don't love it.
It's so there. I really think the Blue Album is perfect from start to finish. I love it, even though there is a song I've discovered may be problematic.
Yeah.
All right, well, Katie, now that you've made that point, would you begin to tell us about the song that you chose here?
I'm really sorry that I'm going to break the streak because my song isn't from Pinkerton, but I don't think it's hard for anybody to guess that my song is from the Blue Album.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I agree. That's my favorite of the Weezer album.
But my song is not the song that Brad thought it was going to be. So I'll start there. Brad really was absolutely positive that my song was going to be My Name is Jonas.
Which is also one of my favorite Weezer songs.
I love that song. And I really thought it was going to be my choice too. And even when Brad said it, I was like, damn it, he knows what I'm going to do. He said it out loud to me, but I'm going to do it anyway. But then I started to listen to the Blue Album over and over and over again. And as I was really listening for lyrics, because that's what I do here, I guess that's what we do here, there was something else that stood out to me and also really brought me back to when I was young and I loved this album. So there were some runners up. I didn't pick My Name is Jonas, which I love. And I didn't pick Say It Ain't So, which I actually really, really, really connected to when I was young, especially the bridge of that song really just speaks to me so much. And it's up there as one of my favorite Weezer songs. But instead, I picked one that I didn't expect to pick, even though I loved it for its oddness and its quirkiness. And then I kind of rediscovered something about it that was more meaningful to me than its quirkiness. So I picked Undone, the Sweater Song.
Really? Oh, interesting. Yeah. I thought you were going to go with The World Has Turned and Left Me Here.
You know what? That also was a song on the album that I absolutely adore.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Blue Album was one that I would listen to like a sad teenager in my room with the lights dimmed, just reflecting on my life. But not to be too personal, and I won't be too personal, I was having a little bit of a hard time as a teenager. And I think that was part of why I discovered it in middle school. But I just listened to it and listened to it all through high school, all through college. I wore my CD out. I had to buy another one.
Really?
I just,
oh, I love it.
That's an intense listen right
the
there.
Blue
That's
Album.
Hard to do.
That was more... More so because of this than Surf Wax America.
I love that song.
That song's fun.
And I think
that's
it's
a
part
fun
of
song.
What you need on the album.
You
because
need fun.
I was in like a really, you know, it's in a really deep
Andrew
philosophical
W.K. would
part
argue
of my
the
life.
Same thing.
It's really fun.
Party, party, puke and party. But I needed those songs on the album that, you know, were uplifting and were fun. In the Garage, which he says in a really weird way. Garage. In the
G apostrophe A-G-E.
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of all like the spoken word stuff
yes,
that happens
because I
here?
Think you need the spoken word stuff for what the song's really about. So Undone, the Sweater Song came out in October 1994. I found out that it hit number 30 on the mainstream rock chart, which means it actually got to a higher position than Buddy Holly. Even though Buddy Holly was on the chart for longer, this was only on for 7 weeks.
Buddy Holly was, like Josh was saying before, it was like an iconic video. Like, Buddy Holly is a great song that I enjoy, but the video, I think, was more memorable than the song.
That's probably true. Yeah. I mean, that's probably my least favorite song on the album, if I'm honest.
Interesting.
Buddy Holly.
Interesting. El Scorcho went higher
on the charts
than Buddy Holly.
Interesting.
Even though it was like number 19 on the alternative charts.
Huh. Interesting.
At its peak. So even though it was critically hated, it somehow managed to get higher than the stuff on the Blue Album, which was like the darling of the late 90s. Like.
Sure.
And what did El Scorcho get to on the mainstream rock charts?
I think it was 19.
Do you remember?
I think that was 19.
On the rock
charts. Good Life was 32, I
19
think.
Was right. modern rock
19
tracks.
19 was, modern rock tracks.
Okay. And Undone, the Sweater Song, was number 30. And
yowzers.
I also found out some fun things about it, that it was the first song that Rivers Cuomo wrote for Weezer. I didn't know that when I picked it, but so it's the first song that he ever wrote as, you know, a writer for the band Weezer when they got together, and it was the first song that they ever released as a single. So it's the first single that they released.
I think that this is also an iconic video too, not just because it's like the first Weezer video, but he's got that weird bowl haircut. There's like dogs running through.
Dogs running around. I do remember.
So
that
this
part.
Is this is another Spike Jones video who then became huge. And then there's the weird scene at the end where the drummer is running around the drum kit and playing, which he then had to do at shows for years because the fans would demand it.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. It's just a weird thing. He would just like circle the drums, just like hitting them like they were playthings.
So. I remember watching this video like in between cuts of like MTV's Spring Break.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. Like when MTV showed videos, songs that didn't chart as high would still get out there to the public.
Right.
You know, that's why we know the Sweater song. That's why we know El Scorcho. We don't know the Good Life.
Shut up.
That's okay.
I don't know the videos because I didn't have cable until I was in college. So
he said about this song, I think his own personal reflection on this song is really interesting. He said that when he wrote it, he wanted to write something that sounded like the Velvet Underground because he was such a big fan of the Velvet Underground. But years later, he listened to the song. You know, he had obviously listened to, played, blah, 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 the song so many times. And all of a sudden it dawned on him, and he told us to Rolling Stone, that it's almost a complete ripoff of Sanatorium by Metallica.
Yeah.
So he himself said that in an interview to Rolling Stone. It's like, I didn't even know it at the time. In fact, I thought I was influenced by something else altogether. And then it came to me as if like an epiphany. Oh, shit. My song sounds like Sanatorium from Metallica.
Well, Rivers Cuomo was like a big metalhead.
Oh, yeah.
So evidently that's part of his background.
This was his favorite. I wonder if Metallica was influenced by Velvet Underground when they wrote that. And
maybe.
Then if, like, the same thing comes out of it.
Now I want to go and listen to all of this stuff in a row. Because when I hear the Sweater song, I don't think Metallica at all.
How did he get from like being a because they refer to like everything he read refers to him as being a big metalhead in like high school. They were like 18 when they were writing the Blue, Blue album. Like it's not like this was like a decade later and he grew out of the metal. Like he was listening to all this metal and then he wrote the Sweater song and
this like
California surf rock,
surf rock
he's in that area
kind of blend.
But then on top of that, it was like one of the later songs. I don't remember which song it is. One of his later songs that he refers to.
That's, if you're wondering if I want you to, I want you to.
No.
Your Slayer t-shirt fit the scene just right.
Awful song, no.
Don't say anything about any other songs.
But no, there's one song where he talks about, like, he sat down, listened to, I don't know why he's vague about it. He's like, he listened to an album with a Blue cover and a naked baby on it.
Uh-huh.
And then immediately sat down and wrote some songs. And then before they knew it, they were closing for Keanu Reeves' band and getting a
Dogstar
record deal. Oh, yeah. That was how their first gig ever was, as the closing band after Dogstar. That was their first gig.
Some people just got it easy, I
like,
guess.
How
you know,
do you usually have opening bands? A closing band? That's a weird thing. Anyway,
it's the band that chases everyone out of the room.
Weezer!
We've been both the opening and closing band on the same night, as a matter of fact.
We have,
yeah.
We have, in various formats. But like, how did he get from God, I love Slayer to the bowl haircut and a sweater? Like, Nirvana doesn't get it. Like, Nirvana's in there, but it didn't get him there. Like, how did he get to this?
Well, I think Kurt Cobain wore quite a few sweaters, if you remember. I'm just saying.
I also wore sweaters, saying that
but
I was
obviously. But he was wearing the sweater more like Brad wore the sweater.
If you remember.
I wore a sweater vest.
Nirvana Unplugged, he's wearing
a terrible dad sweater. It is a grandma
He also had
sweater.
A weird bowl cut. Also.
True.
Yeah, he did.
And so we see the connection.
Well, but I see, so I can't
remember.
You're talking
about the look, I'm talking about the music.
Well, I can't remember who, I think actually it was Jack Johnson, was on another podcast. It might have been the Pete Holmes podcast, but you made it weird. And he was saying, he's like, when I sing, I'm not trying to do this. I'm trying to sound like Marvin Gaye, but this is what comes out. And so when I think about that with like Weezer, he's trying to do metal, but he can't do that. So this is what comes out.
Man, I hear that, bro. Every time I sing, I'm trying to sound like Stephen Page, and this is what comes out.
All right. Who's
Stephen Page? Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, okay. No, I could see that. You can, yeah.
Instead, you just sound like Neil Diamond.
I do sound like Neil Diamond.
Please do America at some point.
Who, by the way, just retired after being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So, so let's just have a moment of silence. I'm going to pour one out for the homie, have a moment of silence for the late great.
Oh, whoa, stop it. Slow down.
That was an accident.
You can cut that out and say something else about Neil Diamond.
I have the perfect response for that.
Go for it.
Bum, bum, bum.
Katie, can you tell us why this is the song you chose? What lyrics inspired you to choose this song?
this is weird. And even I think Brad and Josh, who have known me since I was a teenager, maybe they've forgotten. I don't know. I was so painfully shy as a teenager.
Oh, no, I remember.
Okay, good. Yay, I'm so happy you remember, because I almost feel like, as an adult being such a chatty, outgoing person, I almost feel like that didn't exist, or that people won't accept that I was so painfully shy. So this song is about someone who is being interacted with at a party, who is just screaming on the inside, and everything they're saying out loud is just like, yeah, man, I'm fine. And I just related to that so much when I was young, and then kind of just forgot about it even being a thing. And listening to it so many times again this week, it just really, really spoke to me. And so when you asked me, how do I feel about the spoken bits? You have to have the spoken bits. You have to
understand what's happening lyrically.
Somebody saying like, oh man, it's gonna be the best. I'm so stoked. Take it easy, brah. And then it's like you
get. It's gonna be so rad.
You get the inside of I'm me, me be. God damn, I am. I can sing and hear me, know me. That's what the person who is so shy, or it's been interpreted as. Well, Rivers Cuomo himself said, "Quote to me, it's a very sad song about depression. To people who heard it on the radio, they thought it was hysterical." But I see what he saw in it. I mean, I wasn't like a depressed teenager, but I was really shy. I could be super outgoing with my friends, and he'd plant me into a situation where I was with a bunch of people who didn't really know me well, and I didn't want to share with them on one hand, and then but everybody's having fun and people are talking to you, like, yeah, that's cool, that's fine. And then on the inside, you're going, hear me, know me, I can sing, ah, you know, and I love that line
maybe,
of like,
maybe.
I like that. I like that because I think it really poetically speaks to the frustration of the moment. I, me, be, goddamn. I mean, it's followed by goddamn because you're going, I want to say something, and all I'm doing is just fumbling over everything that's happening inside of me.
So much I can, now that you're talking about it.
I can relate to this song so much more now than I could when it came out. Not because I wasn't like that as a teenager, but because I didn't think about this song enough at that age to really connect those dots.
Yeah, I definitely, you're adding new perspective for me. I don't think I ever listened to it with enough depth. Like I always, I suppose listening to it last week, there were moments where I was like, oh yeah, there's definitely more to this song and there's definitely a lot of metaphor going on here, but that I wouldn't have thought of when I was a teenager, but not to the depth that you're going.
I think even as a teenager for me, my love of it was more subconscious. You know, I understood some level of what I'm saying about it now when I was, you know, 14, 15, 16. But then listening to it this week, I just thought, oh, shit. Now I really understand why I listened to this song over and over and over again. In fact, can I do verse two as well?
Yeah, go for it.
Like the next bit of talking is the girl talking to him, and she's trying to get him to... Oh, God, I just had a memory that involves you, Josh. You didn't do anything. You pointed out something to me, but I guess I'll explain it after I explain this. So the girl is saying to him, I think I'm going to go, but my friends don't really want to go. Could I get a ride? And he doesn't really say anything. And then it goes into the verse. Oh, no, it go, it gone, bye bye. Who I think I sink and I die. And I know that maybe sounds overly dramatic, but I think it actually speaks to the moment of you're interacting with someone who clearly likes you. They're putting all the signals out there. I think my friends are not gonna go. Could I get a ride with you? And of course on the inside he wants to be like, yes.
Yeah.
And he says nothing. And then you get the verse of, oh, no, I waited too long. And now I feel like I'm sinking and dying because I didn't take an opportunity that was right in front of me. Josh was my high school best friend's boyfriend. And we're all still friends today. In fact, I talked to her yesterday. Hi, Jess. So we went to my junior prom all together, Jess and Josh together as boyfriend and girlfriend, and me and a person who I guess I won't name today as my date, who was just my friend. And Josh was a little older than us,
you
1 year.
Not.
And so he drove us, and you probably don't remember this, but we pulled up to my house first because my date lived closer to Jess. And he was like very awkward, my date, in the car. And he was like, should I walk you to your door? And I was like, no, I'm fine. We had fun. Great. And I just like got out of the car really fast. And you guys drove him home awkwardly, I'm sure. And then you and Jess both just gave me such a hard time about how I had really missed the boat on all of these boys' signals. And as I was talking about this now and I looked at your face, I was like, oh yeah, I remember like when this happened. Do you remember that or no?
I don't.
No, I wouldn't expect you to.
I don't. Because I'm picturing, like, I suppose I'm sort of mixing now Katie with then Katie. Mm-hmm. So when I'm imagining this dialogue, it's like you having this awkward, quiet moment where you feel like you can't say what you want to get out of you. Somebody else is talking. But then I'm interjecting now Katie. So your inner monologue is going, oh my God, they're wrong. Do they know that they're wrong? I should really tell them that they're wrong.
That's funny.
Yeah. I've grown.
I also want to point out what may be the obvious here is the metaphor of the sweater unraveling, leaving him naked on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you want to destroy my sweater, if you want to destroy the outer shell that I'm showing to you, just pull a little bit and I'll be raw and naked in front of everybody. Yeah. And I love this song so much. I'm sorry it wasn't as fun as everybody else's.
No, it's great. I love it.
That's a great song.
It's deep and it's wonderful.
And this is the song that brought Weezer out into the world.
Yeah.
So that alone, like even if you didn't give
us this
analysis, like
Katie's, you know, sort of bringing home how it resonated with her, and it clearly resonated with an entire generation in that same way,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's on a conscious level or a subconscious level, because it's really, I mean, not a lot of 18-year-olds are writing songs with that much depth to them.
It's really deep in its use.
There's
of
a lot
symbolism
of layers hanging
and metaphor.
Out.
Yeah.
There's something in my literary brain that just is firing, you know, on all whatevers when I look at it.
So they were great. So Weezer has all these moments of genius.
Yes.
Just like peppered in throughout their career. Even though we
throughout their early
no, no,
early
in
1994
and 1996.
It's saran wrapped over. It's over saran everything. It just wraps around everything.
I'm going to say it's confined within a small box of 94 to 96.
Let's just end this Weezer series now. Everything is great.
What we can say from today, without question, is that
there are great Weezer songs.
He definitely wrote really good Weezer songs over an 18-month period. Now, without knowing anything else, we can say for a fact that really good Weezer songs were written between 1994 and 1996.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell, I'd say 1984 and 1996. Let's 1974 and
1976.
What it's year?
Huh? Times.
Everything's wonderful.
I gotta say, like, Weezer, they're a prolific band. They took several years hiatus in there, but, like, there are bits and pieces throughout their career that you just absolutely love about them as a band and their existence in the stratosphere. That Weezer exists is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And we have touched upon their best work here tonight. I think that's magical. I think that the rest of this series
is going to be very upsetting to Teresa.
Painful. I think that Teresa will...
It's all great.
Teresa will walk away from this series still saying that Weezer is great.
Yeah.
And that's fine. She's allowed to do that.
And Josh is neutral about Weezer, I would say. Neutral?
I think Josh is not neutral.
Not neutral about
Weezer.
He has
complicated feelings.
I would say Josh maybe used to be neutral about Weezer, and then we introduced him to this idea, and it's changed him.
I believe, yes. The research that you had me do for this series of podcasts has taken me from neutral to complicated but definitive feelings about Weezer.
I think Josh is going to largely agree with you and I, Katie,
although,
for the most part.
For me, talking about anything bad that Weezer has done is really an instance of killing your heroes, because
I agree.
My love of the Blue Album and of El Scorcho, the song, is so enormous, is so undeniable that having to say anything else that they do is bad is painful to me.
Yeah.
You know what
Let's not do that.
I'll tell you, like, there are so many good Weezer songs that we have not talked about tonight out there in the world.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we should do. Everybody go around and say one, if you can, go around and say one good Weezer song that we didn't talk about. We have to do it really fast.
This is not a lot of pressure.
This is so much pressure.
Just pick one.
Oh, my.
Any. It doesn't have to be the best. Just one that you like.
Okay. Only in Dreams.
Only in Dreams? Okay. I'm going with Say It Ain't So.
All right.
Oh, great one.
Josh?
Man, I would have gone with Say It Ain't So. But I would also go with Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Interesting.
For No One Else, Across the Sea, all the things I can't.
For
I
No
can't
One Else, anymore. Even Let's go after with we talked this week.
Yes, I, even after we talked about For No One Else, I still have
Teresa,
feelings about
your
it.
Brain well, has fried.
It's because so many emotional things, like seeing a guy, chair down. Seeing somebody play it on, like, acoustically at a concert when I was in high school and being like, oh, that high school boy is dreamy. I mean,
yeah,
we Teresa's are so love is pure.
I wish everyone could see her body language.
And deep.
There's so much happening.
I love it.
There's so much movement.
And she has true loyalty.
I'm very loyal to Weezer. I love all the songs and everything. Like, there's so much emotional connection to everything. I don't. There's a weird thing happening that
we're just waiting for Brad to come back. He'll just cut all
just
the awkward conversation.
Threw a chair.
So Brad threw a chair. Brad got like inspired by Teresa. He knocked over his chair and he ran to get his guitar. Basically,
Brad also knows that. That I love sitting around and listen and while people play guitar and sing songs, it makes me so happy. It brings me so much joy.
I'm gonna
let
you know that most of this is getting cut. So
that's all right.
Since I threw the chair down in a fit of rage. So I guess I will wrap this one up. I just want to thank everybody for listening, for sticking through this for the past year. Way
whoop,
to go.
Yeah.
Episode 52.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, song suggestions, please reach out to us. We are at decompositionpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @decomp_pod, Facebook and Instagram at @decompositionpodcast. Katie, am I forgetting anything this week?
No,
again, I am not forgetting anything, which is great. And thank you guys for listening. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, get on iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, or otherwise. We'd love to know what we're doing right or wrong. And you guys just chill till the next episode. So do you guys want to attempt this sing-along?
Yeah, gurgling noise. Like,
that's a good job.
Can you do that while I play?
I can't remember.
I can do it.
Just point at Teresa when it comes in.
God damn you half Japanese girls. Do it to me every time. Oh, the redhead said you shred the cello. And I'm jello, baby. But you won't talk, won't look, won't think of me. I'm the epitome, a public enemy. Why you wanna go and do it like that? Come down on the street and dance with me. I'm a lot like you, so please. Hello, I'm here. I'm waiting. Oh, I think I'd be good for you, and you'd be good for me. I asked you to go to the Green Day concert. You said you never heard of them. How cool is that? So I went to your room and read your diary. Watching Grunge Lake drop New Jack through a press table. And then my heart stopped listening to Cho-Cho San. Fall in love all over again. I'm a lot like you, so please. Hello, I'm here, I'm waiting. Good.
it. I gotta sing about it and make a record. Oh, how stupid is it? Would you give me a minute? Just come to me and say hello.
Oh, how stupid is it? For all I know, you want me to. And maybe you just don't know what to do. Or maybe you're scared to say, I'm falling for you.
Does anybody want to play the guitar solo?
I was like, you're the
only one with a guitar.
So then the answer is no.
I wish I could get my head out of this sand, because I think we'd make a good team, and you could keep my fingernails clean. But that's just a stupid dream, and I won't realize, because I can't even look in your eyes without shaking, and I ain't faking. I'll bring home the turkey if you bring home the bacon. I'm a lot like you, so please, hello, I'm here. I'm waiting, oh. I'm a lot like you.
I'm a lot like you.
Oh, I think I'd be good for you, and you'd be good for me.
It's the greatest day of my life.
Yay!
Teresa has never had a better day ever.